Labas and good afternoon. This is Kęstutis Deividas, and you're listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio right here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial, and of course live streaming audio at www.ktym.com.
Aplankyti žiedų, argi tu jų dar nepasilgai, o gal seka sugrįžti į baugų.
Thanks again for tuning into Independent Lithuanian Radio this afternoon. You just heard a little excerpt, again, from our collection of greatest partizanai hits, a collection of moving and romantic and haunting songs about Lithuanian forest brothers and freedom fighters. And, again, we love sharing snippets of that with you here on Independent Lithuanian Radio. Yesterday at St. Kazimierz, was a funeral for Viktor Grinius, also known to his friends and to most of the Lithuanian community as Vygis Grinius. Vygis was 72 years old and very interesting person, and had quite the interesting life. Entrepreneur, husband, father. Owned everything from restaurants and real estate developments to a company known as Offshore Model Basin, which had one of the largest indoor swimming pools in I shouldn't say swimming, but one of the largest indoor pools in the world, where they used to test drilling platforms, like, you know, out in the ocean. Oil drilling platforms were tested in the pool, and also because of his wonderful personality, and he truly was this, came off as this happy-go-lucky fella, but he was, you know, really smart, really sharp, a great salesman, as people mentioned yesterday at the services, and he was able to schmooze up to the Hollywood elites, and pretty soon they were filming movies in his giant indoor pool complex when they weren't testing drilling equipment. I think Titanic, many scenes of Titanic were filmed there. Anyway, Viktor Grinius, Vygis Grinius, is 72 years old again. We will miss him. Very, very interesting and full life. He is survived by his wife, Beatrice Grazina. All condolences to you and his son, Alukas. Viktor, Vygi, may you rest in peace. Now we'll move on to more routine parts of our regular program, and that includes the weather. And those of you wondering when spring will spring in Lithuania, well, I've got news for you. Probably in about 7 or 8 days, because today and tomorrow the highs will still be only in the 30s in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. But by Wednesday, it'll hit 40. And by Friday, April 12th, we'll see 49 degrees. So, knock, knock, knocking on 50 degrees in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. Spring is here. Locally, tonight, of course, is the annual awards banquet for the Baltic American Freedom League, and that's being held at the Latvian Community Center, 1955 Riverside Drive. That's 1955 Riverside Drive. And again, that's tonight, 6 o'clock cocktails, 7 o'clock dinner, 8 o'clock is the program. I believe this event is sold out. Tonight's recipient of the Baltic Freedom Award will be Marius Markevičius. And unless you've been completely disconnected from the community, you'll know that Marius has produced and directed, written the Other Dream Team, about the 1992 Lithuanian Olympic basketball team and how they won the bronze medal and the relationship with the Grateful Dead and all that. And so he will receive the award tonight. You know, congratulations again, Mato. And the keynote speaker will be Representative Adam Schiff. He represents California's 28th district, which includes the Atwater Glendale community, the whole community in and around St. Casimir's Parish, the Lithuanian sort of cultural center, and all the way north up into Pasadena. So this is a gentleman that odds are pretty good represent many of our listeners if they live in that area, like central Los Angeles, Silver Lake, Echo Park, again, all the way up to Pasadena through Glendale and La Crescenta and the like. I guess that standing room only is the only way I could tell you about this, that if you want to show up, I'm sure something can be arranged. If you'd like to hear Representative Adam Schiff and watch Modest get the award, because, again, I believe they are sold out, but who knows. So should you be so inclined, show up at the door tonight, or call Marita, and she'll fill you in at 818-321-1811. One more time, 818-321-1811. Promises to be a very special night tonight, the Baltic American Freedom League Annual Awards Banquet at the Latvian Community Center at 1955 Riverside Drive. And finally, before we go off into our news stories for the day and other topics, I want to thank those of you, many of you, for your warm feelings for myself and my herniated disc problems. Yes, it's getting better. It's getting better. I had an epidural, and I'm going to have another one. But since I began sharing with all of you, I appreciate you listening to me whine. But I want you to know that I'm a lot better now. I can drive, I can walk around, and all that stuff. With a slight limp and favoritism to one leg, but much better than it was. So thank you so much. And again, because we have so much to cover, we're just going to keep right on going instead of having our traditional little break before the news. One of our own has been named Archbishop in Lithuania. Yep, the Pope has named an American. That's the headline. Pope names American an archbishop in Lithuania. Pope Francis, the new guy, okay, has named Bishop Gintaras Grušas. We've had him on this program, known him for years. He's Bishop Gintaras Grušas, a 51-year-old, they say, Washington, D.C. native, to be the new Archbishop of Vilnius, Lithuania. Now, they don't tell you that he lived right out here in Westlake Village area of Los Angeles for many, many years, and a whole generation of Lithuanians know him. Lithuanian Americans know him as Father Grušas. He worked at IBM. Then he decided that he needed something more in life, and he went off to seminary school and, again, spent many years here in Los Angeles and at St. Casimir's. He was in scouting in Atethaninke, very, very active in the community. Anyway, I'll go back to the story. Pope Francis has named Bishop Gintaras Grušas, 51, to be the new Archbishop of Vilnius, Lithuania. This broke yesterday. The new Archbishop, who has served as head of Lithuania's military ordinariate since 2010, succeeds 76-year-old Cardinal Audrys Bačkis. The Vatican announced on April 5th that the Pope had accepted Cardinal Bačkis' resignation and had appointed the former IBM technical consultant for marketing to succeed him, Gintaras. Shortly after Pope Benedict XVI named him bishop in 2010, Archbishop Grušas then said, quote, "I'm not sure if the marketing world took it from Jesus, but there are some basic principles that apply, like people buy from people they like." There you go. Everyone should take that to mind. People buy things from people they like. "When you evangelize," he said, "you don't want to come around with a stick and beat it into people. It just doesn't work," he added. The new archbishop was born to Lithuanian immigrants and grew up in the Los Angeles area. There you go. His parents were separated by World War II, and after 16 years of being caught behind the Iron Curtain, his mother and 17-year-old sister were among just 200 families allowed to leave the Soviet Union to be reunited with the family in the United States. His mom and sister joined his father in 1960, and he was born a year later. An incredible story. Archbishop Grušas earned a degree in mathematics and computer science from UCLA and spent 5 years working as technical consultant marketing at IBM, which he said helped prepare him for the management and project planning skills that are necessary as a pastor. During his time at IBM, he also served a 4-year term as president of the World Lithuanian Youth Association. He entered the seminary hoping to serve other Lithuanians outside their homeland. He spent a year at the Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio, then moved to Rome, where he studied at the Pontifical Beda College, the Pontifical Lithuanian College, and the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas. He was ordained to the priesthood and incarnated for the Archdiocese of Vilnius in 1994. I remember going to visit him in Vilnius in his apartment in Basanavičius Street back in 1994, living quite humbly and overwhelmed, but not... I shouldn't say that. He was up to the task. I think he felt a little overwhelmed in the beginning, but he came around and was up to the task of the new duties given to him back then. Anyway, back to the story. As a seminarian, he went to Lithuania in 1992 for what was to have been a brief summer pastoral program. Instead, Cardinal Bačkis asked him to interrupt his studies and stay on to help prepare for Blessed John Paul II's visit in September of 1993. Ultimately, he was put in charge of much of the reclamation of church property from the state. You know, the Soviet Union, the communists had seized the church property, and he helped coordinate the return of that property to the Roman Catholic Church. He earned his bachelor's in theology from the University of St. Thomas Aquinas in 1994. Later, he received a license in canon law from the university, and he completed his doctorate there in 2001. Since 2004, he has served as Secretary General of the Lithuanian Bishops' Conference, a position he also held from 1994 to 1997. Congratulations to our own Bishop Gintaras Grušas. So now I'm going to switch gears a little bit and go into some historical things about the Partizani, about the Lithuanian freedom fighters. Now, many of you think you know all there is to know, okay? And you've heard this before. We've grown up with these stories. But here's the point that I want to share with you. More and more information is coming out outside of our own community. See, we grew up with this. And do you remember, like I remember when you grew up, nobody knew about Lithuania when you were in high school? Nobody'd heard about the Forrest brothers. Nobody knew about the Partizani. It was all within our group, right? And now, a second and third generation of Americans of Lithuanian descent, guys like Modest Markevich is doing the film about basketball. People like Ruta Šepetys writing about their deportations. And only one of her parents was Lithuanian, her father. And she does a historical novel, and it goes to a bestseller. New York Times bestseller. Translated, I think, in something like 40 languages now. All around the world, awards, okay? The story's getting out there. That's why this is important. This is on history.net, okay? History.net and militaryhistory.net, okay? They've just recently published an article called Lithuania versus the USSR, a secret hot fight in the Cold War. Now, I'm going to share this with you, and there's background about Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia that's redundant to many of our listeners, but bear with me. Again, Lithuania versus the USSR, a secret hot fight in the Cold War. Quote, the randomness of Stalinist atrocities made everyone feel like a potential victim, engendering anger and despair. World War II is supposed to have ended in Europe in May 1945, when German representatives signed the Act of Military Surrender in Berlin. Isolated German units held out a little longer, and there remained sporadic instances of unrest elsewhere. Greece was in a state of turmoil. Civil war would break out there in March of 46 and last until 49. A new Cold War loomed between the Soviet Union and the United States. Yet, for the most part, the guns fell silent. But in at least one part of the continent, the guns did not stop firing. In a remote forest in southern Lithuania, on May 26, 1946, the partisans of the Iron Wolf Regiment leapt into action as Soviet troops advanced cautiously through the woods. Hiding their valuables, including printing equipment they had used to produce subversive literature, the partisans abandoned their bunkers and fled several hundred yards into the forest to await developments. Shortly thereafter, a frightened rabbit heralded the impending arrival of the Soviets, and a scout reported the enemy had discovered the partisan camp. Suddenly, a young partisan named Juozas Lukša noticed a Red Army soldier standing just yards away, automatic rifle at the ready. Lifting his own rifle, Lukša put the soldier in his sights and fired. The Russian fell like a post, dropping his weapon as gunfire erupted throughout the forest. Keeping up their fire, the partisans slowly withdrew. The Soviets refused to be drawn deeper into the woods. Instead, they turned to plunder the partisan camp. The day of reckoning would have to wait. Beginning in 1944, as Adolf Hitler's shattered armies retreated from Russia to the heartland of Germany, an armed insurgency spread across Eastern Europe. It intensified after Germany surrendered and Joseph Stalin's Iron Curtain came down. Officially ignored at the time and still largely unknown today, the fight against Soviet domination left tens of thousands dead in Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Belarus, and the Ukraine. The Soviet atrocities, including mass executions and forced deportations, helped incite this desperate but surprisingly well-organized armed resistance. Hardy partisan bands in those countries held off the Red Army for years until largely suppressed by a brutal counter-insurgency campaign. Nowhere was the fighting more widespread and violent than in tiny Lithuania, where, incredibly, the last active partisan resistance was not eliminated till 1965. Lithuania is the southernmost of the Baltic states, a great kingdom in the Middle Ages. Over time, it finally disappeared from the European map in the 18th century, falling under Russian dominion. Nationalist feelings revived in the 19th and early 20th centuries, and Lithuanians once again dreamed of independence, which became a reality in 1918 as the Russian and German empires collapsed and Lithuania declared it free. A period of relative prosperity followed, but by the mid-1920s, Poland had annexed Vilnius, which Lithuanians regarded as their historical capital, and Germany and Russia had become increasingly ominous neighbors. In 1939, the Germans and Soviets invaded Poland, and secret terms of the subsequent Nazi-Soviet pact split Eastern Europe and initially assigned Lithuania to German domination. But in September, the pact's signatories agreed to reassign most of the country to the Soviet Union in return for concessions to Germany elsewhere in Eastern Europe. Soviet occupation of the Baltic states began that autumn under the guise of defense and mutual assistance pacts that placed Red Army garrisons throughout the region. In June 1940, as Germany crushed France, the Soviets occupied and annexed all three Baltic states. Over the next several months, Stalin planned for mass execution and deportation of politicians, intellectuals, community leaders, and other unreliables from the former republics. But fortunately, the Soviet machine moved relatively slow. The first of a series of planned deportations did not take place in Lithuania until June 1941, when Red Army soldiers swooped down in the middle of the night to herd more than 30,000 civilians off to Siberia to not be seen again. 8 days later, Germany invaded the Soviet Union, including Lithuania and the other Baltic states. Infuriated by Stalin's atrocities, many Lithuanians at first welcomed the German invaders as liberators. Thousands of insurgents, including some former Lithuanian army units, harassed retreating Soviet columns, inflicting thousands of casualties despite the Red Army's savage reprisals. Not all the Lithuanian rebels were altruistic. Some collaborated with the Germans against the country's population of 210,000 Jews. Naive Lithuanian hopes for independence under German protection soon foundered, however, as signs emerged that Adolf Hitler intended to treat his eastern conquests as occupied territories. Heinrich Himmler spoke of killing or deporting most Lithuanians as racially unreliable, but his first task was to exterminate the country's Jews. Almost immediately after the German invasion, SS troops, with the active cooperation of many civilians, began systematically murdering large Jewish populations of Vilnius and Kaunas. By the war's end, they had slaughtered all but 1,000 of Lithuania's Jews. To Himmler's frustration, however, attempts to recruit Lithuanians into the Waffen-SS were dismal failures. While thousands of Latvians and Estonians eventually joined up, resistance groups in Lithuania boycotted German recruiting efforts. Himmler, in turn, declared Lithuanians racially unfit for the privilege of serving in the SS, and German troops retaliated on their recalcitrant subjects by closing schools and deporting Lithuanian officials to their own concentration camps. By February 44, driven to desperation by the approach of a victorious Red Army, German officials resurrected elements of the old Lithuanian army as a sort of home guard. But as resistance to Nazi rule mounted in the ranks, the Germans attempted to draft guardsmen into the SS. Lithuanian officers and soldiers universally rejected Nazi service and fled to the woods. The Germans caught and executed some. Those who remained in hiding served as the nucleus for the resistance to again returning invading Soviet. Soviet forces crossed the border in early July 44 and had occupied most of the country. Lithuania's dense pine forest teemed with refugees, German deserters, and Lithuanian soldiers evading conscription. The Soviets struggled to establish control in the almost complete absence of any political infrastructure. As the Soviets approached, Jozas Luksha, a 22-year-old architect student at Kaunas University, went into hiding with his three brothers and joined one of the armed resistance bands in the woods. After Germany surrendered, Stalin resumed his long-planned mass deportations. From September 45 to February 46, the Soviets deported more than 100,000 Lithuanians to Siberian gulags. Many more would follow. The impact on a population of 2.5 million people, already impoverished by war, was catastrophic. The apparent randomness, mostly deportations, but including looting, beatings, rape, murder, made everyone feel like a potential victim. By spring 45, 30,000 Lithuanians were actively fighting Soviet rule. Only in western Ukraine did the population rise up against the Soviet on a larger scale. Many thousands of Latvians and Estonians also resisted. The Lithuanian resistance included individuals of all social and economic backgrounds. Women fought with men. Many insurgents wore old Lithuanian army uniforms to emphasize their status as legal combatants, but their ranks included a few Red Army deserters and escaped German POWs. And though their number was comparatively small, they were not without hope. No one imagined they could defeat Stalin's battle-tested war machine, but many predicted Western political or military intervention. At first, the insurgents were entirely decentralized, striking against the Red Army when and where they could. The Roman Catholic Church initially provided the only structure, organizing resistance cells around parishes, sometimes under the command of individual bishops and priests. By 1946, however, the resistance had been nominally coordinated under a national movement. It adopted various names and political platforms before settling in 1949 on Lithuanian Freedom Fighters, Lietuvos Laisvės Kovų Sąjūdis, or the LLKS, and calling for independence under a Western-style democratic government. To the Lithuanian people, the partisans were simply known as Miško Broliai, Forest Brothers. It also applied to the women in their ranks. Partisan bands were nominally organized into 9 districts in 3 military regions. Units ranged in size from a few individuals to several hundred, with contacts among units and districts maintained by specially trained liaisons, usually young women. Some insurgents lived full-time in forest bunkers. Others merged by day into civilian life, working in towns or on farms while gathering intelligence. At night, they would retrieve their carefully hidden weapons and carry out attacks. Living conditions were primitive. Partisans depended on sympathetic civilians for basic supplies and used abandoned German or Lithuanian equipment as well as weapons captured from the Soviets. From 44 to 46, the Forest Brothers concentrated their raids on Soviet Interior Ministry troops and secret police, which were primarily responsible for carrying out deportations. Partisans blew up installations and even launched open assaults on Soviet garrisons. One of the most storied engagements took place in May 45, when several hundred Soviet NKVD soldiers assaulted a detachment of some 80 Forest Brothers in the Kalniškės Forest in southern Lithuania. The battle lasted several hours as partisans resisted repeated Soviet assaults, killing dozens of soldiers before withdrawing into the forest. Insurgent bands sometimes occupied whole townships and ran up the Lithuanian flag over municipal buildings. These large-scale operations resulted in heavy casualties, with more than 14,000 insurgents killed by 1946. Partisan leaders changed tactics then, operating in small numbers, avoiding open battle. They intimidated or killed Soviet officials and suspected collaborators, booby-trapped anti-Soviet posters, interfered with attempts at collectivization and land redistribution, and attacked polling stations for rigged elections. Partisans also gathered info on deportation operations and helped civilians escape. Soviet countermeasures were heavy-handed. In 1944, the Red Army seriously considered a proposal to deport the entire Lithuanian population to Siberia. The communist leader, Mikhail Suslov, who had overseen wholesale wartime deportations of Muslims from the Caucasus, quipped, "We need Lithuania even if there are no Lithuanians," and considered equally drastic measures in the other Baltic states. Soviet leaders rejected his suggestion, but Sergei Kruglov, the Soviet commissar of internal affairs, decried any sentimental approach to repression and ordered the execution of civilians suspected of supporting the resistance and the burning of their farms and villages. Soviet soldiers carried out these orders and also committed atrocities on their own volition. Occasionally, Soviet officials would attempt to curry favor with civilians by disciplining their more vicious subordinates. Others turned a blind eye. By 1947, the Soviets had to admit their measures were ineffectual. If anything, they only made the partisans stronger by increasing civilian support. In many regions of the country, the Soviets ruled the day while insurgents controlled the night. Fearful of these developments and aware of partisan attempts to reach out to the West, Soviet leaders decided to change tactics. Major Sokolov, formerly of the secret police, who successfully suppressed revolts in Ukraine, was brought in as a specialist. The biggest problem, he said, was the lack of reliable intelligence. Russian agents who attempted to infiltrate the partisan bands were quickly captured and killed by wary Lithuanians. To counter this, Sokolov turned to captured former Lithuanian insurgents who were amenable to being bribed, retrained, and sent to rejoin active partisan groups. Their knowledge of partisan jargon and ability to pass tests of loyalty made them more useful. In some cases, Sokolov even organized fake partisan bands that engaged in staged battles with Soviet troops. The quote-unquote survivors, actually Soviet agents, fled afterwards to genuine partisan bands joining them, and they were welcomed as battle-tested reinforcements. Such deception spread paranoia and provoked counterproductive partisan reprisals against suspected collaborators. These agents, who received training in surveillance, interrogation, and torture from a special Soviet secret police school, were known as Special Forces by the Soviets and Stribai by the Lithuanians, also translates to destroyers. They were frighteningly effective. Recently opened Soviet archives revealed that by 1949, the Stribai had infiltrated partisan units to their very highest levels. Soviet agents identified insurgent leaders and their civilian supporters and even penetrated Lithuanian emigre organizations in the United States and the West. The success of Sokolov's countermeasures did not slow Soviet aggression, however. Mass deportation ramped up after 1947, and by 1952, the Soviets had sent up to 250,000 Lithuanians to Siberia. Targeting regions that had shown sympathy to partisans, these measures severely undermined civilian support for them. The Soviets also employed new terror tactics, as the mutilization and public display of partisan corpses, forcing civilians and school children to file past them. Ladies and gentlemen, there's more here, and I will share it with you next week. Again, this is on history.net, a military history, and again, referring to recently opened archives and the like, and this is so important. And like I say, though some of you know these stories and these facts, rather, the rest of the world is beginning to find out more about it. This is Kęstutis Reividas for Independent Lithuanian Radio, here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. Tell your friends all around the world, all around the country, that they can listen live streaming audio at ktym.net. Thank you all for your support, and hope you tune in again next week. Iki pasimatymo.
Palinko liepa šalia kelio, pravirko motina sena, sūneli. Tėvynė tave šaukia ir vėl laisva bus Lietuva. Sūneli, tėvynė tave šaukia ir vėl laisva bus Lietuva. Aš toli, toli iškeliaus, nuo tėviškės nuo brangio. Mergaitė, neliūsk vieną palikti, likus, aš vėl sugrįšiu pas tave. O jei aš žūsiu už tėvynę,